Donald will not rest until he has done all he can to take care of everyone impacted by this terrible pandemic.
A softer tone and empathy shown by the First Lady of the United States. This is Thursday, August 27th, and this is VOA Asia. I'm Ira Melman. Also ahead, some are questioning the locations being used for some elements of the Republican convention. U.S. officials are reportedly contemplating calling treatment by China of its Uyghurs genocide. A possible major hurricane approaches the U.S. Gulf Coast. It is all on today's VOA Asia. On the second night of the four-day Republican National Convention, First Lady Melania Trump offered her case for a second term for President Donald Trump, joining others including Secretary of State Mike Pompeo, who broke with tradition and delivered his speech from Jerusalem. White House correspondent Patsy Whitaker-Swara has this recap.
From the White House Rose Garden, First Lady Melania Trump sought to convince Americans that her husband deserves a second term, addressing a key concern among voters.
Donald will not rest until he has done all he can to take care of everyone impacted by this terrible pandemic.
Secretary of State Mike Pompeo delivered remarks from Jerusalem, breaking protocol of State Department employees avoiding openly partisan activities while abroad.
The president, too, move the U.S. Embassy to this very city of God, Jerusalem, the rightful capital of the Jewish homeland.
Pompeo highlighted Trump's recent announcement of the normalization of relations between the United Arab Emirates and Israel, a deal rejected by Palestinians. He also reminded voters of Trump's America First doctrine.
So I think you will continue to see gestures to what the Trump presidency thinks are its wins. And I think Pompeo's appearance in Jerusalem is probably the chief among those gestures and also meant to mobilize voters who really care about Israel.
Following Donald Trump Jr.'s speech on Monday, siblings Eric and Tiffany also touted their father's achievements.
On Tuesday, Trump again made appearances from the White House, breaking tradition from presidential nominees who usually stay out of the limelight until the last night of the convention.
Despite his hardline immigration policies, Trump witnessed the naturalization ceremony of five new Americans, another first in convention history.
You've earned the most prized, treasured, cherished, and priceless possession anywhere in the world. It's called American citizenship.
We should expect
while former
that
Presidents Barack
ego,
Obama, Bill Clinton, and Jimmy Carter spoke at last week's Democratic National Convention, former Republican President George W. Bush is not featured this week. He and his late father, former President George H.W. Bush, also sat out the RNC 2016 convention.
I think what this speaks to is the revolution in the party that Donald Trump has effected over 4 years. He has changed the Republican Party more than any man since Ronald Reagan.
Vice President Mike Pence will formally accept his nomination in a speech scheduled for Wednesday. Patsy Whitaker-Swara, VOA News at the White House.
Questions are being raised about where some of the elements of the Republican National Convention are being staged. We'll talk with VOA White House Bureau Chief Steve Herman about that next. These are among the top Asia headlines you'll find right now at voanews.com. South Korea orders thousands of striking doctors to return to work as it counts its 13th straight day of triple-digit jumps in coronavirus cases. Officials with the World Health Organization downplay a confirmed case of a Hong Kong man who became reinfected with COVID-19. A senior Chinese diplomat Wednesday likened Australia's call for an inquiry into the coronavirus pandemic to the betrayal of Roman dictator Julius Caesar. Two Hong Kong pro-democracy lawmakers have been arrested and charged in relation with anti-government protests last year. The Philippines foreign minister says U.S. military presence in Asia is needed. Expanded coverage of these stories and more on Facebook at VOA Asia and on the voanews.com website. We continue now on VOA Asia. I'm Ira Melman. As soon as it was announced that First Lady Melania Trump would give a convention speech from the Rose Garden of the White House, the location became a thorny issue online. Then when President Donald Trump said he'd accept the Republican nomination also from 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue, the controversy grew. Add to that a speech Tuesday night from U.S. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo from Jerusalem. Joining us now is VOA White House Bureau Chief Steve Herman. Tell us more about this.
Yes, Ira, this all comes under the scrutiny of what's called the Office of Special Counsel. That's not the same one that was investigating the Russia connections some time ago, but is a long existing office. And the concerns involve what is called the Hatch Act. Now, this is a 1939 federal law that prohibits most government officials from engaging in political activities while on the job, and also has some rules about what can be done with federal properties in politicking. Now, Ira, I think it's important to point out that the president and vice president are exempt from the Hatch Act, so they can pretty much do whatever they want and say whatever they want without violating the law in regards to politics. But the problem really is for staff and use of government resources.
How serious is this overall?
Well, they are potential violations of federal law, and officials in the Trump administration have been cited for breaking the Hatch Act 13 times by this Office of Special Counsel. And we're told that there are at least a dozen more investigations that were already underway even before we got to the Republican National Convention this week. But here's the problem as far as those that want to see this enforced rigorously are concerned. That if you're found guilty of the Hatch Act, the punishment is left up to your boss. So in the Trump administration, those including White House counselor Kellyanne Conway, who have been convicted of the Hatch Act, it would be up to President Trump to punish her. And of course, he has not taken any action against her. New York Times did a story about this a little while ago and said that there were some aides of the president that were privately scoffing at the Hatch Act and say they actually take pride in violating its regulations.
What about the Pompeo appearance Tuesday night from Jerusalem?
Right. This is another sort of a gray area because there has been a tradition where the diplomats, and especially the country's top diplomat, the Secretary of State, do not get involved in politicking, especially at these political conventions. And Pompeo had, in fact, sent a memo out to State Department diplomats warning them to avoid getting involved in politics. Now, he is facing criticism that this really crosses the line, is something that's unprecedented. But the State Department is saying that his address from Jerusalem was done in his personal capacity, although clearly he had gone there for government business. He's on a junket to a number of different countries. Now, I think, Ira, one thing that is important to point out here, because there's a lot of attention being paid to President Trump and his administration this week with the Republican convention and all the consternation about this. The Trump administration is not the first one to face this sort of scrutiny. If you talk to others who have tracked this for a long time, they'll point out that former presidents George W. Bush and Barack Obama, while they tried to ensure that the line was not crossed, they did have political activities in parts of the White House that where this is deemed acceptable, such as the residence. But what we've been seeing this week with the Trump administration is really going into territory very blatantly that has not been charted before. So this has really raised the hackles of some lawmakers and ethicists.
Steve Herman is VOA's White House Bureau Chief. As always, Steve, thanks so much.
My pleasure, Ira.
Happening now in Asia, the United States Wednesday targeted 24 Chinese companies and a number of individuals it said were part of ongoing construction and military actions over disputed islands in the South China Sea. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. We continue on VOA Asia. The United States is weighing formally labeling China's brutal repression of ethnic Muslim minority Uyghurs as genocide. Politico cited two Trump administration officials as saying that China is estimated to have detained up to a million minority Muslim Uyghurs in prison-like detention centers. The detentions come on top of harsh travel restrictions and a massive state surveillance network equipped with facial recognition technology. Many of China's Uyghur minority have sought sanctuary in Turkey following China's crackdown on the largely Muslim Turkic-speaking minority. Observers describe conditions of those detained by the Chinese government as akin to concentration camps, with Beijing stepping up the pressure on Ankara. Some Uyghur refugees fear for their future in Turkey. Dorian Jones has more from Istanbul.
At a recent demonstration, Uyghur activists complained that on Turkish soil they cannot raise a voice against China. Police had earlier detained the activists for wearing T-shirts showing family members who had been imprisoned by Chinese authorities.
Police said you can go now, but not with these T-shirts. We said why? The officer said you can't. You have to wear them inside out. Forcing us to wear these T-shirts inside out insulted not only our honor, but our mothers and brothers as well.
Turkey is among the nations hosting the largest number of Uyghur refugees, many of whom live in Istanbul. Poet Abdurrahim Emin Parash fled to Istanbul 7 years ago. His wife is in a Chinese detention camp. Parash fears his criticism of China has now made him a target of Turkish authorities.
Police detained me in a restaurant and took me to the Sefakoy precinct. They handed me a document and asked me to sign it. It said, this person is affiliated with organizations that are a threat to Turkey. I said I have nothing to do with these groups and I won't sign it.
Cases like Parash's are not unusual, says human rights lawyer Ibrahim Ergin, who is currently fighting several Chinese extradition attempts against prominent Uyghur activists.
People are taken into detention with the accusation of foreign terrorist fighters, even though there is no evidence. We know that China is putting great pressure on the Interior and Foreign Affairs Ministry and the security forces. During our communication with these authorities, we are told that deporting 5 to 10 Uyghurs would make Turkey more comfortable economically and politically.
Former Prime Minister Ahmet Davutoğlu accuses the Erdogan government of sacrificing Uyghurs to deepen its economic ties with China. President Erdogan rejects the accusation, saying Turkey has given sanctuary to tens of thousands of Uyghurs. As more news gets out on China's crackdown on Uyghurs, the Turkish leader has largely refrained from joining international condemnation of Beijing. That silence makes Uyghurs like Parash nervous.
The authorities have been keeping silent because of this silence. I feel scared. I can't speak about my future. If I do, I would upset myself with bad thoughts because my future is an unknown darkness.
Parash seeks solace in his poetry, having not heard from his family in years. Like for so many Uyghurs, the future appears to offer little hope. Dorian Jones of VOA News, Istanbul.
After you listen to VOA Asia, see it. VOA Asia is on YouTube. See and share the fun with Food Bites, our weekly culinary dive into foods from the homeland. Recipes that came with chefs who immigrated to the United States. Students enrolling in U.S. schools can get their first lessons about life on campus. Subscribe for free and see us often on VOA Asia YouTube.
This news from VOA Asia. Archaeologists in Japan have dug up the remains of more than 1,500 people, many of them believed to have died in an epidemic at a 19th century mass grave that's being excavated for a city development project. All the big stories come your way through the day on VOA Asia Twitter and Facebook. This is VOA Asia. We continue with VOA Asia. The nation's contentious debate over Second Amendment rights and gun control legislation took center stage in both parties' presidential conventions this month. Republicans highlighted the issue Monday night as a St. Louis, Missouri couple who drew attention for pointing guns at Black Lives Matter protesters in front of their home earlier this year spoke in support of President Donald Trump. VOA's congressional correspondent Catherine Gibson has more on the key differences on guns between Trump and his Democratic challenger, Joe Biden.
The right to bear arms. A right enshrined in the U.S. Constitution that President Donald Trump contends will be taken away by Democrats if they win the White House.
They will take your guns away as sure as you're standing or sitting there. They will take your guns away. Either that or obliterate the Second Amendment.
Second Amendment rights have always held an important place in the American political discussion because of the role of guns in the country's founding.
In the name of being able to prevent a tyrannical government. And so because of this desire to have that protection at all times, it undergirds and kind of flows through all of American society.
Gun rights highlighted on the first night of the Republican National Convention by Missouri attorneys Mark and Patricia McCloskey. The couple became famous on social media after pointing guns at Black Lives Matter protesters in front of their home.
President Trump will defend the God-given right of every American to protect their homes and their families.
Gun rights supporters argue restricting guns isn't the answer. The father of a young woman who died in the Parkland High School shooting in 2018 says Trump made the right choice supporting tough school safety policies.
I truly believe the safety of our kids depends on whether this man is reelected.
But frequent mass shootings in recent years have fueled protests calling for gun control legislation. Most Americans support some gun law restrictions, according to public opinion polling. It's an issue with such strong consensus that it was highlighted at the Democratic National Convention last week.
Focusing on the gun violence reduction policies is a place where it can unite pretty much everybody in the Democratic Party's tent. So it makes sense to focus on that as opposed to something that might be a little more contentious.
If elected, former Vice President Biden says he would institute universal background checks, a ban on assault weapons, and a push for red flag laws, laws that would take guns away from people considered a risk to themselves or others. Crucial reforms, says former Congresswoman Gabby Giffords, who was severely wounded by a gunman 9 years ago.
We can let the shooting continue, or we can act. We can protect our families, our future. We can vote. We can be on the right side of history. We must elect Joe Biden.
In an election in which so many issues are high stakes, analysts say guns are still a key concern.
There are a few that really hold a high profile in the American voters' mind, and one of those is gun rights. So there are a lot of single-issue voters who will literally go down the ballot and pick the candidates that fall in line with that one issue.
According to a Pew Research survey this month, 55% of registered voters said gun policy will be a very important part of their vote in the 2020 election. Catherine Gibson, VOA News, Washington.
There is no current evidence that dogs can be infected. Hand washing after contact with all animals is recommended. This protects against other bacteria such as E. coli and Salmonella that can pass between animals and humans. For more information, visit www.who.int or www.cdc.gov.
This is VOA Asia. Hurricane Laura is headed to Texas and Louisiana. It may even hit Arkansas, according to forecasters, as a devastating Category 4 hurricane. AP correspondent Julie Walker has more.
National Hurricane Center senior specialist Stacy Stewart warns residents to prepare for Laura, whether that means evacuate or board up before it's too late.
Some areas, when they wake up,
Thursday morning, they're not going to believe what happened.
He says this Cat 4 hurricane will bring storm surge heights of more than 15 feet, significant rainfall, major flooding, wind speeds of 130 miles per hour, and tornadoes well in advance of the eye of the storm.
So what doesn't get blown down by the wind could easily get knocked down by the rising ocean waters.
He says it's not just a coastal event. Laura will move well inland and could cause flooding for at least 30 miles. I'm Julie Walker.
Meanwhile, flash floods killed more than 70 people and injured close to 100 in Parwan province north of Kabul, Afghanistan, early Wednesday. And the numbers may rise as more cases are reported, according to officials monitoring the situation. In the provincial capital of Charikar, hundreds of homes have been destroyed, and the search is on for people buried under rubble. Hundreds of flights have been canceled in South Korea, while North Korea's leader expressed concern about a potential loss of lives and crops as the countries brace for a strong typhoon. Facebook has blocked access within Thailand to a group with 1 million members that criticize that country's king. However, the social media platform said it would launch a legal challenge. Adam Reed reports.
A Facebook group with over 1 million members has been blocked in Thailand by the social media giant over its criticism of the country's king. The Royal Marketplace group was created in April by Pavin Chachavalpongpun, a prominent critic of the monarchy, but users found their access was denied on Monday night after a legal request from the Ministry of Digital Economy and Society. Thai laws forbid defaming the king, with penalties of up to 15 years in prison. Pavin, who has exiled himself in Japan, told Reuters, quote, "Our group is part of a democratization process. It is a space for freedom of expression." Facebook has promised to launch a legal challenge to the government's demand to restrict the group. This all comes against a backdrop of near daily youth-led protests against the government, led by the former military junta chief, and unprecedented calls for reforms of the monarchy. By Tuesday, Pavin had already set up a new group with the same name and quickly amassed nearly 500,000 new subscribers.
Reuters' Adam Reed reporting. You're listening to VOA Asia. I'm Ira Melman. The pandemic has not only affected the livelihoods of people around the globe, but it has also taken a toll on many household pets. In Malaysia, there's been a significant increase in the number of abandoned pets as families face financial pressures after losing their jobs. Dave Grunebaum reports from Puchang, Malaysia.
Snowy, a one-year-old mixed breed, is enjoying a nice belly rub. She loves playing games with sister Cynthia and Kaushalya Chandra, along with her parents.
I want to give my all, my passion, my love, my caring.
Snowy has not always been surrounded by such a loving family. A local pet rescue group, Voice for Paws, took her in after she was abandoned and found on a palm oil plantation. She was eventually adopted by the Chandra family, who first saw her while looking at photographs on the Voice for Paws Instagram page.
And eventually when we saw Snowy, it was like, okay, there's a spark there. The eyes is like, okay, we need to take this dog. So we just take it off.
Animal advocacy groups in Malaysia say the number of abandoned pets has increased significantly in recent months because of the hardships connected to the coronavirus pandemic. Voice for Paws holds adoption drives in Kuala Lumpur, Malaysia's biggest city, hoping to attract potential owners. The group says since late March, it has seen about a 60% increase in the number of dogs it gets called to help compared to normal.
Of course, it's really, really disheartening and really sad to see so many dogs being abandoned these days.
Medical experts say the danger of a pet spreading COVID-19 to its owner appears to be low. But animal advocates say the fear persists. Yet the main reason owners are abandoning their pets might be financial hardship.
People lost their jobs. They did not have the funds to actually look after their dogs, to feed their dogs at home.
Before Voice for Paws puts the pets up for adoption, they're vaccinated, given necessary medical care, and spayed or neutered.
Yeah, we just want to find them homes. Homes that, you know, people will care for them, will love them, will treat them right.
And that's what Snowy has now, a love that has returned to the Chandras.
I think Snowy is bringing a lot of love to the family. So like Snowy and my family, we are getting along so much and we have a strong bond connection between us.
Dave Grunewald for VOA News, Puchong, Malaysia.
Thank you so much for being with us. Thanks to our managing editor, Diane Gao, and our VOA Asia team of Jim Stevenson, Keith Lane, and Doug Bernard. I'm Ira Melman in Washington, wishing you an